You are Locked On Broncos, your daily podcast on the Denver Broncos, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
And the Denver Broncos have taken Super Bowl 50.
That's right. You were Locked On Broncos. It's time to chin up. It's time to drop some knowledge. I am Chad Jensen, the publisher of MileHighHuddle.com. With me is my co-host, Luke Polglaze, a semi-pro football coach, an NFL draft analyst, a brand new hedgehog owner. Luke, my friend, what's good?
Man, it is a good night. It is playoff time. As an NFL fan, you start to see these scenarios start to settle themselves out. It is the most wonderful time of the year.
May I ask how you arrived at a hedgehog for a pet?
Yeah, I had a friend and former roommate who had one, I'd been wanting a little pet for a while, and I wanted to name it a football term, so I went with the good old 335 alley safety name and called it Bandit.
Nice. Well, listen, people, Locked On Broncos, you got to understand, we're not here to just report the news. We're here to give you a more in-depth analytical look at your favorite team, the Denver Broncos. So be sure to tell your friends about the show, share the episodes on social media, very important, and help us light the internet up with orange and blue, because we are committed to bringing you a daily podcast focused entirely on your Denver Broncos at least 5 days a week. We're religious about this thing because we're just sick. And right now, emphasis on the sick and maniacal about Broncos football, as you, our listener, is. Follow the show on Twitter. This is also crucially important. At Locked On Broncos, we received a flood of new followers today answering the bell. We appreciate that. We really need each listener to take a quick second, find at Locked On Broncos, click the follow button, no skin off your teeth. Very important to us growing the show, and we've had to recently start the account from scratch. So do us a solid there. And, of course, the home of Locked On Broncos is Audio Boom, but also make sure to subscribe on iTunes if you're an Android user, Stitcher, because there's only two crucial games left on the Broncos schedule, and you're not going to want to miss a single episode. Now, real quick, before we get into the centerpiece storyline of the show today, let's talk about where the Broncos stand health-wise coming out of Sunday's loss to the Patriots. Derek Wolfe, of course, injured his neck, and Gary Kubiak said Monday that he's going to be fine. It's an issue that Wolfe's been dealing with for most of the season, according to the head coach. The real issue, Luke, is at tight end, where both Virgil Green and A.J. Derby are in concussion protocol, which leaves only Jeff Heuerman healthy, who did make a couple of nice catches on Sunday, although his blocking left much to be desired.
Yeah, he did have a couple nice catches. That one kind of just seam route was one in particular. But, you know, this is a guy who has struggled really this year, and for them to be left with him is a bit of a concern, considering that they have they had another guy in John Phillips who they ultimately cut at some point during the season. Yep. He ended up with the Saints. So he's not available. And right now at this point, if you're not going to have Derby or Green available for the next game, in the next couple days, you're going to see them bring up somebody from the practice squad, if not sign a veteran as well. You know, at this point, the veteran's not going to be able to learn this offense fast enough. And so they're going to be stuck with probably Heuerman starting and a guy like, you know, Henry Krieger Coble, who I know both you and I were high on in the preseason. Yep. With him being the number two.
Well, the topic on everyone's mind today following that disappointing loss, 16-3, of course, Broncos dropped one to the New England Patriots at home. But what's on everybody's mind is what happened in the locker room after the game. Now, just to set the stage, Mike Silver of NFL.com, and for those who aren't familiar, this guy is an old veteran of the business. When you think of the stereotypical national guy who likes to swoop into town once or twice a year at key moments and stir the pot, that's Mike Silver. That's what he's built his career on. But he published a piece Sunday night at NFL.com that shed light on the rift that has grown between the Broncos defense and the offense. Here's a quick snippet of what Silver had to say via NFL.com. Quote, "When the beaten Broncos spilled into the locker room, before the door was open to reporters and other outsiders, Coach Gary Kubiak gathered his players and asked if anyone wanted to address the team. Veteran left tackle Russell Okung, who signed with the Broncos last March, stepped forward to speak, and cornerback Aqib Talib strongly objected. According to several witnesses, That set off a spirited shouting match between the team's defensive backs and offensive linemen, one which Kubiak had to defuse before it turned ugly. Close quote. Now, Luke, you know, we've heard things all season long about a rift in the locker room. We've talked about it on this show. We've talked about it on our previous podcast, Huddle Up. It's not really news to anyone who covers the Broncos. We saw Aqib Talib, for example, snap and shove Jordan Norwood in the back when he muffed a punt against the Kansas City Chiefs a few weeks ago. We've seen guys like Emmanuel Sanders leave the field after, you know, another three and out and visibly apologize to the defense as they prepare to trot back out onto the field. We've heard some players complain in the media, many of which have been quote-unquote unnamed sources, et cetera, et cetera. And these are just a few examples, but after back-to-back losses, and one of the most bitter variety, frankly, things came to a boil. Tempers flared. Aqib Talib telling Russell Okung to shut up and sit down or, you know, make a play before you have the nerve to stand up and address the team, I think, Luke, at this stage comes as no surprise.
Yeah, and it comes as no surprise that that would be happening. But what's interesting to me is that it is hitting big media, that it is hitting places like NFL.com. I've been hearing about these kind of issues boiling in the locker room for a couple of years even. You know, this offensive frustration, it isn't new. You know, it comes from last year too when the offense really wasn't that great either and the defense carried them to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, the truth is, for a team like the Broncos, high visibility, I mean, they are the defending world champions, let's face it. It's an issue that's going to receive a lot of scrutiny, and for good reason, but especially when a prominent national guy sparks it. This is a team that is fractured, really, in every sense of the word. Statistically, you look at the offensive statistics, bottom third in almost every category. Look at the defense, top 10 almost every category. Emotionally, they're fractured, individually, collectively. You can go down the line, and this is a team basically that is composed of polar opposites at this moment. On one hand, you have the dominant defense that actually held Tom Brady to arguably his worst statistical performance in a win in recent memory. And then on the other, you have the most anemic, impotent, you know, predictable offense in the NFL. What some fans might not realize, though, is that, you know, outbursts and conflicts like this happen regularly in football at every level, high school, college, and the pros, and even on the most competitive teams. The issue is you don't really want to hear about it at this stage in the season. And a lot of the time, though, when this does happen, it goes down behind closed doors. This particular scenario, though, Luke, you know, the emotional explosion did become public. The Broncos had to address it. Here's what Gary Kubiak had to say about what went down in the locker room on Monday.
Well, you know, Jeff, that's okay. I mean, hell, they played really good, you know, and offensively we didn't score enough points for us to win. That's okay. I mean, it's okay to be upset. And I mean, hell, there's pain in what we do, and you put a lot into it. So there's no division. I mean, there's just that's battling, and that's part of football. And you know, they defensively, we should feel really good about ourselves and how we played yesterday. Offensively, we should look at it and say, "Damn, we did some good things. We should have scored some points." You know, so it's a great team we were playing, and we played good enough on defense to give ourselves a chance to beat them. But we did not play good enough offensively to do that. So that's football.
So Luke, Kubiak remains adamant that there's basically nothing to see here. Move along, move along. But what do you expect him to say? I mean, after all this, there's been substantial evidence this year that Gary Kubiak is no stranger to the psychological phenomenon known as denial.
You know, denial might just be the right word for it. Another word would just be kind of, I don't want to say this, you know, in a kind of derogatory sense, but lack of focus. You know, Kubiak has a lot of things to deal with as a head coach, and you know, this rift hasn't been, I wouldn't say, the first thing on his mind. I mean, he's a guy who's trying to boost the offense and boost the defense, and then healing the rift between them too is not really that common. It's not the first thing on your checklist when you're trying to get the offense right is, well, let's smooth relations. So this kind of like internal PR, That's new. And when you have, you know, quotes from guys like Kayvon Webster on the front page of NFL.com saying, you know, I can't believe that expletive, we held Brady to 16 and still lose. Has that ever happened? Now that's public. And now you have to turn to internal PR and external PR when the whole time you've just been, you know, trying to coach.
Yeah, and it's just with two crucial games left on the docket, it's a very inopportune time for this type of thing to go sideways. The Broncos they kissed goodbye, as we talked about yesterday. You know, they kissed goodbye the privilege of controlling their own destiny for the playoffs. They're still very much in the conversation. Let's not lose sight of that. They still have a solid chance at making the playoffs as the final sixth seed for the wild card. But now, of course, they're going to need help from outside teams. You know, we'll go through it later this week, but now you got to start saying, okay, here are all the scenarios. You know, Pittsburgh's got to win here, and Baltimore's got to lose there, and all the things that go down the line. But the bottom line is, for those to even matter, those scenarios, the Broncos have to continue to win with these next two games, a road trip to a Kansas City Chiefs team that's going to be fired up hot after that loss to Tennessee, and then Oakland in week 17, one of the hottest teams, of course, in the NFL. So we'll see how it shakes out, but it's just inopportune time, Luke.
Right. And, you know, I've been developing a theory about this over the course of the year, and I think this is as good a time to mention it as any, which is the NFL is a 16-game season. This is not baseball with your 150-whatevers, hockey with your 80-whatevers. You know, you get 16 games. To me, there's increasingly no such thing like a must-win game, because all of them are must-win, because you don't get time to make up losses. If you lose a game like this, you know, you take a step back and you don't control your destiny. There's no such thing as a must-win game, because you got to win all of them with no time to make up.
That's a good point. Each and every win gets magnified. Each and every loss gets magnified. But another topic I want to get to real quick, Luke, it involves Emmanuel Sanders and Malcolm Butler. Now, Butler, as Bill Belichick is wont to do, matched up with Sanders for much of the game while Logan Ryan took Demaryius Thomas. Sanders was targeted 6 times by Trevor Siemian, and he hauled in 3 of them for 48 yards. And you look at those numbers on paper, and although they're not great, you don't think to yourself, oh, well, you know, Sanders was shut out. But here's the thing. None of Sanders' receptions came with Butler in coverage. After the game, Butler, of course, goes to the media, brags that he shut down Emmanuel Sanders, a Pro Bowl receiver. Sanders replies publicly by saying, quote, "If you think Malcolm Butler shut me down, my 2-year-old son, Princeton, can play cover 2, closed quote. Now, Luke, it's hard to argue with the numbers, you know. And the eye test told me, you know, if I'm being frank, that Butler handled Sanders with some authority on Sunday.
Malcolm Butler is going to have free drinks in New England for life because of a certain Super Bowl play, much like Daryl Bevel clings to his job and Richard Sherman, gets on him for not running from that spot. That aside, people are going to remember Malcolm Butler forever for that one play. That aside, he has developed and turned into a very, very good cornerback in New England. They're number one cornerback. And people don't – I think they don't realize that he's forever that, you know, that kid from wherever, West Alabama, whatever, who made that play.
Right.
And I disagree with that. I think he's turned into a very, very good, dangerous weapon in that backfield for New England, which is, you know, somewhat lacking in talent back there. So for them to have a young guy who's playing like this, playing like a number one cornerback, that is a big deal. And I agree. I do think he shut Sanders down. What Sanders is referring to is, you know, cover two, you know. If Butler just passes him off back and takes the flats, he's not in coverage on him technically anymore. That said, man, Sanders has got to do better than 3 catches for 48 yards in a game like that.
Yeah, I mean, the onus is on you, Emmanuel, to make a play in the clutch in a big game. And even though your track record would indicate that that's something that you can do, and you've proven that, for whatever reason, you know, we don't know the reason necessarily, but I think it's safe to say Malcolm Butler outplayed you on Sunday, and the same goes for Demaryius Thomas and Logan Ryan. Now, real quick, I want to talk about SeatGeek, because here we are heading into week 15 of the football season. The Broncos are facing two must-win games, and, you know, they're not a lock for the postseason. So you got to understand SeatGeek is the easiest way. If you want to see the Broncos play this year, 2016, you might only have two more shots. SeatGeek is the easiest way to find tickets for the last couple games of the season. And there's nothing like being in the stadium for the biggest games of the year. And with SeatGeek, it's never been easier to get the guaranteed seats you want for great value. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone. It's by far the easiest way I've found to buy tickets because I can be anywhere, and with just a few taps, I can instantly find the seats for this weekend or any game this season. With SeatGeek, you always get the best deal on every ticket because SeatGeek goes out and price compares for you by searching multiple ticket sites. And, you know, prices can vary depending on where you shop, but SeatGeek will always find you the lowest available price. And SeatGeek wants to help you get the most bang for your buck, which is why every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on the value, which allows you to immediately see any underpriced seats. Point click, you can find the best deals that are going to fit your budget, especially it being the holiday season. Plus, every ticket you buy on SeatGeek is backed by their 100% guarantee, so you can shop for tickets with confidence. And best of all, Locked On Broncos listeners get a $20 rebate off your first SeatGeek purchase. Here's how you get that. First off, download the SeatGeek app, then go to the settings tab and click add a promo code, and then enter promo code LOBRONCOS. SeatGeek will then send you $20 after you've made your first purchase. That's real American cashola. We're not talking doll hairs here. Download the SeatGeek app, enter promo code LOBRONCOS today. All right, Luke, let's turn to some questions that kind of rolled in the day after the Broncos Week 15 loss. And listen, you know, we love the engagement. We've talked about that before. We're going to put a mailbag segment into the show on the regular. We're still kind of trying to figure out where we're going to put that. But if something's on your mind, doesn't matter. Right now, clearly there's a lot weighing down Broncos country. Feel free to reach out, hit us up on Twitter, and we'll try to address your questions or concerns on the show. Now, Luke, the first question comes from at David Pulsifer on Twitter. David asks, quote, "Is the Kubiak offense fatally flawed? Can it be dangerous and a weapon and not just a management tool?" Close quote. It's a great question. You know, there's no doubt that Kubiak has lost sight of the scope, I think, of this offense. There is no edge to it. The play calling is predictable. There's almost I've talked about before, like a willful obstinance in Kubiak's failure to even try and exploit mismatches, like we saw Bill Belichick do and Josh McDaniels on Sunday. You know, they tried a variety of different approaches to try and get Julian Edelman singled out on linebackers, and eventually it worked, and we saw him explode a little bit in the second quarter. We don't see that from Gary Kubiak. We don't see that savviness and the ability to adjust and try and exploit the opposition wherever they see a mismatch. The offense is out of whack, and Luke, it's out of balance.
Right, and one of the biggest mismatches New England was creating through that game was putting the fullback, James Devlin, out wide. And, you know, him taking away a cornerback in the zone defense, that creates mismatches all along the line. Now, the Gary Kubiak offense is not about that. That's not the way they want to create mismatches. They want to stretch the field horizontally so they can stretch the field vertically. And they start that with running outside zone, you know, getting the field to stretch hard, you know, to get the defense flowing hard to the sideline to stop the outside zone. Then they come back off that with inside zone, and now that defense takes one step kind of too far outside, and then that running back takes the bang read, which is basically the step back into the defense across the flow on inside zone. And then, you know, then that's when they hit the big backside runs. And then once you got that flowing, once you go back to the outside zone, then you can have the outside zone, wait, play fake, bootleg out, and hit those crossing routes. That's the Kubiak offense as we know it. That's the staple that he runs. Now, we haven't seen that kind of offense, to my mind, in years. The Kubiak offense as we know it has been nowhere to be seen. When he was back in Baltimore, he wasn't running bootlegs with Joe Flacco. You know, last year was really – it was really the Peyton Manning offense. Let's be honest with ourselves. There wasn't that much of Kubiak principle in there. And this year, we haven't even really seen that much of it. There's no commitment of the run. You know, there's no commitment to getting that outside zone of attacking the ends on the defense to set up the interior. There's been no commitment to the run at all. I mean, this is an offense that, while it's run by Gary Kubiak, I wouldn't necessarily call or characterize it as a Kubiak offense. And whatever this is doing, it's not working. And we've seen the Kubiak offense succeed in the past.
Yeah. So is the Kubiak offense fatally flawed? I mean, to answer that in the larger sense, no. I mean, it's been a proven system that can win in the NFL. The issue is the guy that's piloting that offense right now just is out of whack. He's lost sight of what makes it a dangerous weapon, you know,
right,
to use your verbiage, David.
Right. And I think that's the key here. Is the Kubiak offense fatally flawed? Well, no, but I don't really think that this is the true Kubiak offense.
Our next question comes from at John Q. Common, friend of the show. John asks, quote, I'm wondering if Kubiak is spread way too thin. His Jordan Norwood comments scare me, close quote. Now, Luke, this is something that we've worried about and chewed on quite a bit lately. You have Kubiak, you know, the idea of him being spread too thin. You have Kubiak, the administrator. I mean, you're a coach, and you can probably speak more to the nuances and the small nuts and bolts that go into just being a head coach. Then you have Kubiak, the teacher. You have Kubiak, the leader. Kubiak, the game plan designer, the Kubiak, the play caller. And really, the thing that concerns me is you consider his past struggles in Houston, you know, his health issues, dealing with stress. It really is a concern, and I think, Luke, a fair question to ask.
Well, it is a fair question to ask. This is, you know, any coaching position, you've got a lot of moving factors. You know, for me, on any given game day, when I'm, you know, for high school, for instance, when I'm up in the box with the headset, you know, I'm watching the entire field. And, you know, on one play when we run, you know, without going into too much detail I'm sure all the other DC high school football coaches listening to the podcast.
Cover your ears.
Right. So when we run one specific motion, I'll watch, you know, how that one is going to influence the linebackers and one particular passing combination, how that might influence the safety,
right,
or, you know, how our right guard, because I know his ankle's been hurt and how he's handling the pulls, you know, and that's just me. I'm just the observer from the booth. I'm just calling down these plays. Now, how the head coach is, he's got to worry about that, both sides of the ball, special teams. He's got to know situationally, okay, where am I going to go with this? Okay, our backup's been dealing with the shoulder. So he has to know this entire team front to back, because for him, there are no excuses.
Yeah.
His subordinates, you know, they can say, oh, well, I was dealing with this. Or no, there's no excuses for a head coach. It comes down, the buck stops there. Now, that said, that is a lot. That is a lot to have to worry about. And it's sometimes easy to just say, okay, well, you know, we want to go with a guy who can contribute on offense this week and a guy who's going to have special teams value. Cool. Let's activate Norwood next. You know, some of these decisions I've seen head coaches make on game day are just throwaway decisions.
Yeah.
They're just, okay, this on to the next, because they have so much to worry about. And now the question is, does that come back and bite you sometimes? And, you know, we see guys like Bill Belichick, who I know everybody always brings him up because he's the exception to the rule, but, you know, has he ever made like a bad personnel decision on game day? I mean, right. Yeah, but you don't remember it.
Yeah. He, you know, if there is one, it's an outlier. I mean, and that's the thing. I mean, Kubiak is spread thin. These are issues that you'd have to assume have to be addressed in the offseason between the front office and Kubiak. We'll talk more about that here in a minute. But next up, we have Stuart McPeak. Stuart asks, quote, what does Kubiak see in Norwood? How many muff punts will it take for someone to force a decision? Close quote. Now, Luke, we've spent a lot of time on the issue of Norwood already, but I think that to really answer this one, I would say it has something to do with just, as you talk about, making an arbitrary decision and then on to the next thing, but also drilling a little bit deeper is Kubiak's loyalty and Kubiak's faith in his players.
Right. And, you know, having faith in your players is important because, you know, sometimes the different, you know, there's so many situations where I've had a defensive back get in their head, get in their feelings, and, you know, putting them back out on the field might be dangerous because they're, you know, in that moment, they want to make the play. And sometimes that backfires and sometimes the play gets made on them. And, you know, as they're walking off the field after a long touchdown, you know, you put them in that situation knowing that that might happen. But sometimes they go out there, they see themselves making that play, and then they go out there and they make that play, and that's exactly what you need. Sometimes it's important to have confidence in those players and to give them another shot and say, hey, you know, go out there and get one for me this time. And they do. And then there are moments where, man, damn it, I shouldn't have put him back out there. He wasn't ready. He was too caught up in the game.
Right. And, you know, the thing we got to remember is that Kubiak is known as being uber loyal, almost to a fault. And after Sunday's loss, you know, we heard him talk about believing in guys and how Norwood has made, you know, quote, a lot of plays for this team, close quote. And I like that sentiment, but as a head coach, you can't go too far down that rabbit hole. And by the way, I'm wondering, where are all these plays Norwood has supposedly made for this team? I mean, he's got the one touchdown this year, and that's the only case I can really think of where he's literally made a play. And before that, his biggest contribution to the Broncos, of course, came on that record 61-yard punt return in the Super Bowl. And it's a problem, and with how clearly compromised Norwood is mentally right now, and with his confidence, I don't expect, honestly, to see much more of him moving forward. And again, as I've said before, you know, this show, it's on Tuesday. I wouldn't be surprised if the Broncos, you know, if they get in a tough spot and there's someone to be let go, that person is Norwood. Now, our next question, it's a doozy. At Mile High Maniac asks, quote, if coaching changes need to be made, how does Elway's friendship with Kubiak complicate the issue? Now, this is an excellent question, I think, Luke, and one that frankly gives me great cause for concern. We've talked about Kubiak's loyalty, and it's not just to his players. He's loyal to his assistants, which is why you've seen certain guys follow him from city to city, from job to job, even when he wasn't the head man. You know, Rick Dennison is the big question for me. There needs to be new life. There needs to be new blood offensively. And Kubiak, I think, needs to step away from being the main play caller and primary designer. Of course, you'd still expect him to be involved in game planning and all that. But Dennison, I just don't think, is that guy. Elway's going to have to make a change at that position, I think, in the offseason. And you have to wonder how that's going to play out with Kubiak because, you know, you have Clancy Barone, the offensive line coach. A lot of people are riding right now as a scapegoat, myself included. I got to question how impactful he's been in getting the most out of these players that Elway's drafted, including Connor McGovern. But Barone was a holdover from the John Fox administration, and yet now he's a Kubiak guy. He won a Super Bowl with Kubiak, so you're going to have loyalty issues there. But heads have got to roll with how bad this offense has been. And you have to wonder how much, I think Mile High Maniac is onto something here, Luke. You got to wonder how much John Elway's relationship with Kubiak could conflict with what's best for the organization.
Yeah, well, I do have one take, which is going to be slightly controversial. Let's just jump right into this one. I actually don't believe Clancy Barone is really as much at fault as you might imagine. He actually, to my mind, has been given a very bad hand in terms of offensive line quality. He's been given guys like Michael Schofield, like Tyson Brillo, who are not pro ready, who don't have the strength and athleticism to contribute right off the board. These are guys who really shouldn't be coming in and expected to start. And the fact that they are starting is, you know, partially the fact that there's also not much else around them. And it is kind of a virtue to him that they are starting at this point. So I wouldn't necessarily say that he needs to be shown the door, but he needs to step it up, but given another year to really prove what he can do, which, again, you can't be expected to do a whole lot when you don't have a whole lot to work with. Now, as for, you know, Dennison, this is, you know, this is an issue. Offensive coordinators are not supposed to be kind of this reliant on their head coach, in my mind at least, for the basics like play calling and game planning. And, you know, how often have we really seen Dennison kind of step up and exert his voice into this process? And that, to me, is a key issue moving forward. I know I spoke about this on the podcast yesterday on Monday, and really kind of I think Denver needs a stronger voice at offensive coordinator. And I think that does mean going outside the organization and bringing in one of these bigger name guys who can bring their kind of touch to it, because right now Dennison is not getting the job done. And so Kubiak is going to have to, you know, kind of go against some of his loyalty by letting Dennison go, in my opinion. And that comes down to Elway as well, because, you know, these little things are starting to stack up, and they're starting to give Elway cause for concern. I have no doubt that this team needs to turn things around from the coaching position, because, you know, there are so many minutiae. Nice. Yeah, there's your $20 word of the day for the head coach to have to worry about. But, you know, it's his job for a reason. He needs to worry about those things, and things like Norwood, that's a big issue for personnel for the head coach.
Certainly something to monitor as we get into the off season. You know, one name to throw out there on the dream wish list would be Kyle Shanahan, you know, who's worked for Kubiak in the past in Houston. Of course, the Shanahan ties to Denver, all that stuff. Unfortunately, there's a good chance he's going to be in the conversation for some head coaching vacancies. If he doesn't take one of those, who knows what could happen, but that's a guy that kind of seems like a no-brainer, who not only fits with Kubiak, has experience working with Kubiak, but could breathe some new life into the audience now, or excuse me, the offense. Now, one thing real quick, one of the benefits that we have at Locked On Podcast Network is the opportunity to work closely with our advertising partners. And the truth is, we do enjoy taking the time on our show to talk about these partners, help them reach new people. Their support allows us to keep this content free for you, our listeners. These are companies we believe in. It's a powerful thing, and it's not something that we take lightly. And we're always looking to grow our relationships. If you're looking let me say it this way. If you're listening to this show, you own a business, or you're in charge of that side of things with a business, you want to reach the male demographic between the ages of 18 and 44, you should take a hard look at sponsoring this podcast, because 98% of our listenership at Locked On Broncos is male, 80% of which are between the ages of 18 to 44. Our rates are very reasonable. Feel free to reach out to us at LockedOnBroncos@gmail.com, and we can talk about it. Now, Luke, one more question, and we'll call it a day. And again, we love the engagement. Keep it coming. Our last question comes from @Greg_Klung. Klung, apologies if I butcher your name there, sir. Greg asks, quote, "I want to know Elway's plan for next year's O-line. Draft or free agents or both? Khalil or Joe Thomas in a trade?" Close quote. It's another good question, Luke, and we know that, you know, the Broncos are going to have to reload this offensive line. And in all probability, it'll come through both free agency and the draft. Now, evaluating offensive line talent has frankly been one of the Elway scouting department's Achilles heels. You know, there's no getting around it. Now, Luke, as an evaluator of the college ranks, as a film junkie, let me ask you this. If you were Denver's GM for a day, you had control of you know, the draft, free agent acquisitions, that type of thing, roll with me on this. What would you do to fix the O-line? Help Greg out here.
Oof, that is a good one. First of all, I wouldn't touch Khalil. I don't think he's really got the talent to play NFL left tackle. And, you know, we've seen this for years, the Joe Thomas trade rumors. Every time I've just thought, oh, man, it makes too much sense for the Browns to trade him. It makes too much sense for the Browns. And it never happens. At this point, I would be surprised if he ever gets traded. I think he's going to finish his career a Cleveland Brown, which is kind of a shame. I think that's the way it all goes down, because, you know, he's a class player, great player, and I think he deserves to finish with a ring at least. But as for the O-line, if I'm drafting, if I'm looking in free agency to fill this offensive line right now, I'm gonna bring in somebody for that, probably that left guard spot, and some competition for that right tackle spot. I'm going to bring in that guard. I want somebody who can be nasty. You know, we've seen some of the best interior offensive linemen in this league over the past couple of years. Guys like, you know, Osemele for the Raiders now, formerly from Baltimore, and Trey Turner for the Panthers. You know, at guard, these are the guys who are just going to, you know, they're going to play nasty, they're going to kick butt, and they're athletic enough to do the job. Now, Denver has shown in picks like Sombrello, in picks like Schofield, they're looking for guys who are usually better athletes than strength, and they're not really kind of strength ready for the NFL. They kind of went away from that philosophy when they drafted McGovern, who is strong and athletic, who just mentally, I'm assuming, doesn't really have the playbook down. Now, they need somebody who's going to come in and be nasty, you know, guys who are going to come in and, you know, there was a Vine I tweeted. This was years ago, and I barely remember seeing it. But, you know, it was of Trey Turner, of J.J. Watt slanting inside, and Trey Turner just, like, pancaking him. You know, just he was engaged with the tackle and kind of drifts over to Trey Turner, and Trey Turner just, bam, knocks him on his back. That's who you want.
Yeah.
You want those interior guys. You know, they're playing against the Derek Wolfs of the world. They're not going to play nice. They're not going to, hey, man, hey, nice play after the play. You know, you want them to be, hey, man, you know, bring that back here, boy. You know, they want competition. They want to be nasty. And you want somebody who's going to come in, and it's not really what you associate with Kubiak linemen historically, but it's got to be somebody. And, you know, he knows this with Osemele from Baltimore, who's got to come in and play mean and, you know, play nasty.
And this is a topic, to be honest, Greg, that we're going to tackle in a much more detail and depth as we get into the offseason and we start evaluating players coming out of the college ranks. We start taking a look around the league at guys who are going to be free agents. And we'll get a little bit more specific in that regard when the time comes. But I think that's all the time we have for today's episode. Thanks again for the questions. Be sure to follow at Locked On Broncos on Twitter. You can find Luke in the Twitterverse at Luke Polglaze, myself at Chad and Jensen. We do want to hear from you. Hit us up. Also, check out the other killer podcasts on the network. You know, this week you're going to want to tune in to Locked On Chiefs. They do a great show. Some interesting stuff there to go behind enemy lines. And we'll have some stuff cooking with them for tomorrow's show. So stay tuned for that. And don't forget to subscribe. For Luke, I'm Chad. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Mile High Huddle.
Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison, here to tell you Geico has more than just great savings. Much more. Yes, while Geico could help you rack up more moolah faster than you can say metamorphosis, they've also been the fastest growing auto insurer for more than 10 years. That's more like it. Furthermore, Geico has fast and friendly claim service. That might seem like an oxymoron, but it's not. All the more reason to say no other auto insurer has more than Geico. Geico, expect great savings and a whole lot more.